This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted. This is such an amazing episode, and it is an incredible story. Alana is such an incredible human. You are going to be blown away by what her last year and a half has been like. To start, I will say she is the founder of the Mom Halo. It used to be called Mom's TO, but she wanted to expand it to include moms that are outside of the GTA. So that's Greater Toronto Area. For those of you that aren't from Toronto, I know sometimes when I say GTA, people think I mean Grand Theft Auto. That is not what I mean. GTA is Greater Toronto Area. So they rebranded to the Mom Halo, which is this incredible community of moms. She started it in her living room years ago. After she had her first kid, she found herself lonely, depressed, and just not feeling like herself, which I think many of us can relate to that feeling. And she felt like she didn't have anyone to talk to with regard to being a mom. So she started this community. She went on Facebook. She invited a bunch of moms over to her house to drink some wine and have some snacks. 19 women showed up in her living room and had an amazing afternoon sharing all their trials and tribulations of motherhood. So obviously she knew she was on to something that day. And so Mom's TO and then the Mom Halo was born. So in this episode, she talks about her journey on starting this amazing community, what it is right now, events that they have coming up. And then also she talks about the charity portion of the Mom Halo, which is called Project Halo. Project Halo is on a mission to raise $1 million for a parents' lounge within Sick Kids Hospital, which is in Toronto. After her experience as a NICU mama with her youngest son, Henry, she realized that something that was really missing in the Children's Hospital in Toronto was a parent lounge. And she gets into her experience when she was waiting for her son to undergo heart surgery. And it blew my mind, especially during COVID when only one parent could go in the hospital at a time. It is just heartbreaking. So she tells us all about Henry's story. He had multiple heart surgeries. He was diagnosed with a rare genetic disorder. And as if that wasn't enough, her entire family, her nanny, her parents, her close family members got COVID. So she takes us through her entire story. It is unbelievable. You will be in shock at how strong she is, how well-spoken she is, and also just honest. I love her honesty. I have known her for a while, and it was really great to sit down and chat with her one-on-one for an hour. So without further ado, please welcome Alana K. Fetz to the Mom Room Podcast. Before we venture into Henry's story, I thought you could tell people who you are, about your family, and then also why you started, which used to be Mom's TO, but is now Mom Halo.
So hi, my name is Alana K. Fetz. I am the founder of Mom Halo, and I have three kids, aged 4.5, 2.5, and a 1-year-old. You can hear some of them in the background now. We started Mom Halo. Actually, when I was pregnant with my first kid, Henry, I was doing all the things that pregnant parents do in their first time, sort of enjoying those moments that are really fun and thinking about all the wrong things, like what stroller do I really need, and taking a million bumpies of myself, and how cute can I look in this outfit with my little bump, and all the stupidities that we think are important. And then when I had my son, Elias, who was born in 2016, I was like, that Mac truck hit. I say it's the Mack truck of parenting. I felt completely bulldozed by this new reality. And I also have coined this idea of like the early days haze, which is everything is sort of mushed together. You don't know what has happened. You're trying to find the joy in the moments. It's kind of hard for most people. That like breastfeeding thing is really bad and hard for most people. And those are the things I probably should have, could have, would have spent time reading about. It's like, what does labor and delivery look like? What is this thing called breastfeeding? Oh, I'm responsible for keeping this child alive. So Mom Halo, which was previously known as Mom's TO or Mom's Toronto, was to me like an act of desperation when I was looking for my girl crew. I was looking for moms to like connect with. And everywhere I went, like people didn't talk to each other. It was like a really weird dynamic. I come from a 12-year history of a community builder, a fundraiser, working in the nonprofit sector, have always sort of like been a gatherer of people, an organizer of stuff. So I was looking for my crew and I couldn't really find them. So I had just moved into the neighborhood we live now. I'm a young mom. I have my babies like maybe 5 months old. And I just like went on a local Facebook page. I'm like, hey, I'm looking for some moms who want to come over to my house and just maybe hang out. It's BYOB, bring your babies, your boobs, and your bottles. And bottles meant like, I was obviously so funny. It's like your baby bottle or your wine bottle, LOL, like whatever that was in 2016 that I thought was really clever. And lo and behold, like 19 random women showed up to my like my matchbook house. They're like, I remember this French Canadian woman was like, what's the catch? What are you trying to sell me? I'm like, absolutely nothing. My husband is a retired chef, so he made like beautiful food. We had like 12 bottles of wine. And I had this aha moment. This is epiphany of like, moms just want to have their identity where they're moms and also have a baby. It's not everything baby, baby, baby all the time. So I really leaned in hard to this like, putting mom first, like baby on the hip, wine on the lip. That's how it came into be, Renee. And then I remember that year there was a really cool event in Toronto that I really wanted to go to. It was like a very bougie, like food and beverage event. And I wanted to like wear my white dress and I wanted to schlep my baby with me. And I went to go buy a ticket. It was like a $300 ticket. And they're like, I'm sorry, you can't come. It's a 19 plus event. I was like, my baby is in a stroller. Like, you can't bring the baby. And I was like, F this shit. I'm going to create an event that looks and feels as beautiful, as bougie. That's all food and beverage where women can bring their baby. And that's how the first ever Very Mommy Wine Festival came to be, was this like really leaning hard into finding a place where moms could come, be themselves, have a glass of wine, and hang out with their babies. Fast forward a few years later, and that's the creation of our community now, which is now known as the Mom Halo. We pivoted hard because we realized we were serving women with our virtual and digital content that were like very much outside of the Greater Toronto area. So very a Canadian following. And we still sort of hit it hard with, I would say, like epic content that's both virtual and when we are in person, really fun. And it's not about wine, right? It's not about getting drunk and being fraternity girls. It's about permission, right? It's about giving moms permission to say, it's okay for you to be both. You can love being mom and hate being mom. You can exercise 5 days a week if that's your thing. Not my thing, but if that's your thing and you want to drink on the weekends, that's your thing. Like, just do you, like whatever you is, just do. So that's how it came to be where we are and where we're going.
I love that you're like, I want to go to this event. Screw it. I'm going to make my own event.
Well, that's what it is, right? A lot of mom entrepreneurs or business owners who innovate in their motherhood is like, I saw a hole in the marketplace. You have one proof of concept of something working. And before you knew it, I think in 2017, 2018, we did 32 events.
Wow.
Thousands of lives, thousands of moms coming to the coolest bars in the city. And that would have turned into, it's like bars and restaurants you either couldn't get a reservation at that would shut, like for us, it was VIP exclusive. This is when Bar Raval just opened. This is when Piano Piano just opened. This is when Susser Lee just opened. Matt Basili, who's actually coming over later today from Lisa Marie, just opened. When restaurants in 2016, we were like really taking off. We were showing up with 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 moms. And the Mom Fest, which is now Mom Fest, which was then called the Wine Festival, it was our answer to saying, like, we have a capacity issue, which is everywhere we go, we max out capacity. So let's see if we can get 100 moms together. Let's see if we can get 900 moms together. So since then, we're going into our basically fourth iteration of this event. And we're expecting, honestly, live, we're going to do a live offer over a few days. We're expecting around 2,500 people to come through the doors, very COVID safe, but over the course of 2 days, because the demand is there. Moms really want that peace. They want that fun. They want to be able to say their baby is allowed to come. They want to meet other moms who are also at different ages and stages of parenthood, but they also want to like shop pretty things and have their own life and smoke that joint or eat that pizza or do whatever you want to do. Like have the carb, you'll be okay, you know? And that's what it was for me, was creating these opportunities and experiences where we give moms a great day. That's it, right? That was that simple. Give moms a great day, give them a great night. And without fail, Renee, I think like that's what made us best in class, is that the mission was so simple. We want to give moms a great day. We want to give them a great experience. And I think we've been able to deliver that repeatedly.
For sure. And so if people want to find it on Instagram, it's at mom, is it Mom Halo?
Yeah, it's Mom Halo.
And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of The Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with not a stuffed nose, but like I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth, is itchy in the mornings and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home. But for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein, I'm looking at sugar content, and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about Project Halo as well, but before we get into that, I thought we could talk about Henry's story. So Henry is your third and last child. Let's talk about his story. It is a whirlwind of a year, or more than a year, that you have been through. I've been following on Instagram, obviously. Can you take us to, because you were pregnant during COVID, during the quarantine time. So can you take us back to your pregnancy and then to birth and kind of how learning about his rare genetic disorder kind of played out?
So it's a good story. And I actually haven't told it yet, Renee. So that's interesting. So I got pregnant with Henry and I've always wanted a big family. I've always wanted 4 kids. You know, each kid is sort of like, oops, baby, you know, we were only planning, oops, but we weren't not planning. We've had a few miscarriages here and there, but I didn't really have like a traditional fertility journey the way that some people do when they're my age. I'm not super old, but I'm older. You know, we got pregnant with Henry and he was kind of a surprise a little bit. It was funny because we got pregnant with Henry right after MomFest in 2019. And the funny story is that we're actually sponsored by a sex toy company called WeVibe. And the story is they sent us about 14 vibrators for giveaways. And I didn't know they were giveaways. So we used them all. I tested all of them and oops. We call Henry our WeVibe oops baby because without the help of WeVibe, Henry would not be here. Anyways, I digress. So that's sort of our sense of humor too, right? It's a little bit raunch. It's funny. anyways, so Henry's our whoops WeVibe baby and I was pregnant during COVID and that was sort of like, okay, you know, this is fine. Like I thought having 3 kids during a global pandemic was going to be the hardest thing I would ever have to do. And then little did I know that little Henry was going to be born. He was born last July. He just passed his first birthday. I've had all my kids at home. I'm a little bit of a hippie that way. So, you know, Henry was born on my bedroom floor, totally easy, natural childbirth with my midwives in tow and nothing, no red alarms at all. Like there was no red flags at all. He didn't look like my kids. I remember looking at him being like, who are you? Who do you look like? Because he doesn't really resemble either of them. And there were some markers now that when I look back, I was like, oh, that was weird. Oh yes, that was weird. Oh, this was weird. And I kind of felt bad a bit. There was some guilt there sort of being like, oh, I should have known better. I've had like a litter of kids. I should know that these things were not normal. For example, so like I've nursed all of my kids, like breastfed them. And I've always had a small challenge nursing my kids. Elias took 3 weeks. Essa took 2 weeks. Henry was like by week 8, the level of precision he required to nurse was like monumental. Like I needed to be exactly like so. And he would drink and he'd drink and he'd drink. And he was never satiated and he wasn't really growing. And then he would literally projectile vomit multiple times. Like not like a spit up. I'd be like his entire like exorcist every single day. And I was like, oh, okay. And then some days he was unsoothable, but I was like, maybe he's just a colicky baby. So nothing that was like super alarming, but looking back, like, you know, extraordinarily challenges with latching. I remember taking him to a orthopathy, I don't know. And she like did some stuff and I thought it was effective. But anyways, nothing really stood out as particularly challenging, but it wasn't until because of COVID also, we weren't seeing anybody. We weren't seeing other babies. So there was no comparison to see him against another child. And when I look back at photos now, when he was in his first 3 months of life, he was a sick baby. Like he looked pretty sick. And I know that now, right? Hindsight's 20/20. And it wasn't until I took him for his 3-month checkup, which was late because we did it at 4 months because of COVID, my pediatrician, who was also my ex podcast host, who's a friend of mine, took one look at him and she's like, he doesn't look okay. And then she took a listen to his heart. She's like, he has a very loud heart murmur. A heart murmur is very common. It's not unheard of to have a heart murmur. She's like, I'm going to send you for a cardiology echocardiogram. I was like, okay. Literally thought nothing of it. Like, I remember it was like just an average day where I vlog on my Instagram channel about whatever I was doing the day. I was like, oh, I need to like go to St. Joe's for this echo to hear because Henry has a murmur. So see you later, like thinking nothing of it and getting there. And the cardiologist was like, does he always look like this? I'm like, look like what? It's like, does he always breathe like this? I'm like, breathe like what? He's like pointing out all these physical things that were obvious to him that were not obvious to me. So they did the echo. They were very like silent. And I have an issue with doctors anyways. Like that's why I'm with midwives. I don't love or trust physicians for a variety of reasons. And then it was the height of COVID, right? So everybody's like scared of COVID anyways. And there was no one in the hospital. It was a very scary thing. So remember all of my ultrasounds were during COVID. Delivered my baby at home with midwives during COVID. Found out this diagnosis with Henry through COVID. So there's like, I'm by myself with all these situations, schlepping my little tiny baby around. And my other 2 kids were still at home because schools were closed and everything. So we're trying to cobble together care for our like rest of our life. And at that appointment, that doctor was like, you need to go to SickKids immediately. They're like, he has this and this and this wrong with his heart. It's like me literally speaking Pig Latin to you, wouldn't know what the hell I was saying.
So he knew that just from listening?
Do one echocardiogram and one EKG.
Oh, okay.
They did it. I was there for 45 minutes and I wasn't at SickKids. I was at a different hospital. He's like, I'm a pediatric cardiologist. I work at this hospital, but you need to go down to SickKids, which is like the hospital. And he's like, you need to go immediately. And I was like, he's like, I made an appointment for you to see cardiology right now. So from the day that Dina Liston, it was 7 days later that they were like, you need to go to SickKids immediately. He rushed us to SickKids into cardiology. I remember I called Matt and I was like, he was in the car in the parking lot waiting for us because two parents weren't allowed in. And I was like, babe, we need to go to SickKids immediately. Like, it's urgent. Like, they want us to go to cardiology. And he was like, what the fuck? I literally started hyperventilating and crying. And as I'm leaving SickKids, I ran into two fans and followers who are like, Alana, are you okay? Like, I see that. And I was like crying. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I follow you and I see you're crying. Like, anyways, I'll never forget running into those two like random women who both like happened to see me and they wanted to stop and chat. And I was like, I gotta go. And we literally rushed down to SickKids from St. Joe's, which is like a 20-minute drive. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, just like over and over again. And we got there, we went to cardiology. They did a full workup. And it was the first time I took photos of him with like the stickers all over his little tiny body. And he's just relaxing, not knowing anything that's going on. I'm literally having a complete mental breakdown because your kid goes from being completely healthy, only knowing normal, like healthy things, to being like, oh, I'm now in a cardiology clinic. Like, this is what we're doing now. So the echocardiographs are like going off. I meet like a senior cardiologist. And again, does he always look like this? Does he always breathe like this? I was like, what? Breathe like what? Like, I didn't see it. So now when I looked at him now, and now that I'm a pretty like sort of seasoned medical mama, everything was wrong. Like, his breath was off, his color was off, his size was off. Like, even the genetic markers are very, very, very subtle in his face, but they're there and I can see them now. It's one of those things that you never, ever want to experience as a parent, but now I'm on the other side of it. So, you know, on the other side of this experience now is we're, okay, so from that appointment, cardiology is like, look, he's been alive for 3.5 months. He has this particular issue called a PDA ligation. It's a hole in the heart between the two chambers of the heart, which usually closes within a week of being born. His didn't close. So it was the reason Henry wasn't growing and the reason he was eating so much and puking is because he was burning so many calories. The heart was pumping too much, so he wasn't growing. That's called failure to thrive, which is the first time I've heard that expression, which is meaning they're super small and they don't meet their milestones. It's a disgusting term, but that's what it's called, failure to thrive, because they're not thriving. He said that's an issue. He also says that the aorta, which pumps blood through your body, was very small. So it's called a coarctation, a narrowing of the aorta. So those are the two things. And they're like, look, we're going to try to fix this and we're going to do it next week. I went from not knowing anything to finding out there's a murmur to having an echo to 7 days later having our first surgery. So that was November 27th. On December 7th, we had our first heart surgery, which was called a thoracotomy. That's when they go through your back. So it's supposed to be less invasive and an easier recovery. And I'm having like a complete fucking meltdown. Like, my kid is about to go into, is having heart surgery. Like, what the fuck? So they go into the back. It's called the schedule. Like, oh, we have an opening on this day. Like, just like, it's just like casually. The way that I'm like, casual. Oh, we have an opening for this day. So they give you the waiver and you have to sign it. It's like, these are all the risks. And in big letters at the end, the last group is death, D-E-A-T-H in big letters. And this like fellow comes in and he's like, you need to sign this paperwork. And I'm there by myself in COVID, in a mask with my kid about to go into the operation. And that's the first time I had my first experience at SickKids checking in and being admitted as a family. So they do the surgery and I'll never forget like just sitting in that waiting room where all the other families are there and there's women fucking weeping next to me and everyone is literally by themselves. There's no parent with another and it's all moms primarily. I would say 98% is moms all waiting. And there's literally like when you go to like, I don't know, like when you're waiting for at the deli counter and like you're waiting for your number to come up, it's your kid's initials and it's like starting in progress over or like in recovery. It's three colors. So I'm just waiting for my little like HK to fucking like That's sitting crazy. There, just fucking sitting there. Anyways, the whole thing was so insane. And then they take them, the babies into, or anyone who's recovering to CCU or ICU is intensive care unit or CCU is a cardiac, the cardiac care center. So when you hear on like the news about people being in ICU, I don't think people understand what the fuck an ICU is. 24/7, around the clock nurses who are normally there post-operatively when somebody is literally on the verge of dying at any given time. That is what ICU CCU is. It's critical care. This isn't some like Grey's Anatomy hospital room where somebody's eating their pudding. They are on a fucking ventilator. They are like plugged in. They are not alive without these people. So that's where Henry was transferred to, was CCU the first time. And I see my little kid come out and he's fucking tubes out of his face, tubes out of his arms, tubes out of every part of his body. He's so small and I'm there by myself. So it was crazy. And that was the first operation. So then we go home, they send us some medicine. We were like discharged within 6 days. We weren't even there a week and we were home. And I was like, okay, we need to handle this guy really carefully and watch out. We had to handle him really carefully. 10 days later, Henry is sitting in his bumbo chair that I obviously put on the counter, which I shouldn't have. And obviously he falls out of the chair and smashes his head on the ground. 10 days postoperatively. This is like late December. I rush him to the, I call 911, like get into an ambulance. We go to Emerge. He's cognitively fine. Like they do everything they can for checking him out, but they bring down cardiology. And when you're a cardiology family, when you're a heart family, they're always checking their blood pressures and oxygen saturation. Those are the two things you're looking for. So this physician comes down and he does in the Emerge, they check his blood pressures. And the way that they check their blood pressure is kind of old school. With a baby, they do what's called the 4-point blood pressure. So they do blood pressure on both arms and both legs. And what they're looking for is a gradient, which means a difference in blood pressures. So it's a little bit technical, but they found, after we brought him to Emerge completely separately, that Henry's blood pressure, like his beats per minute, were 50 beats higher in his arms than his legs. So this means that they had done one part of the surgery, didn't think they needed to do the other part of the surgery. And the more invasive one is called the open heart surgery, which is where they cut the zipper down the front of the chest. It was in that Emerge visit that they said, we need to do the open heart surgery. The first surgery didn't catch what we needed to do. It was one piece. We have to do the other one. So within 2.5 weeks, Henry, at 3.5 to 4.5 months old, had 2 heart surgeries back to back. And when I look at it now, it's actually quite common for cardiac kids to have multiple heart interventions in their lifetime. This close together is very rare. So December 31st of 2020, we went into operation and January 1st, he came out having been a full-on heart warrior, which is when you have that complete heart repair. So anyways, we had a very extended hospital stay with a lot of other complex things. Yeah, so that's what happened. Like Henry was born, it was COVID. I was recovering from the first 90 days of having a child and then went right into this like new existence and still trying to manage my business. I took a little bit of a hiatus, of course, but managing the business, managing the social, managing my other kids. It was fucking crazy. Yeah. And I haven't really even told the story, Renee. So I'm sorry if it's not so succinct, but this is the story. Fast forward, we're home a bit. It's March of 2021. We are home. And the whole thing with getting discharged from sick kids is like, you just want to get home. Because the sooner you get home, the sooner you get back to normal life, the sooner you get back to healing, etc. And like that extended hospital stay for a baby can be detrimental because like they're missing developmental milestones, etc., etc. It's not normal to like live in a hospital in that way. So, you know, it was a really messed up situation because like most people during COVID were not going anywhere. And I was getting dressed every day, sleeping at home during the nights, getting up at 6 a.m. and going to hospital like it was my job. Like I was there every day, 12 hours a day. So that's it really. Like we were home in March and then it was the height of COVID. And what ended up happening was we got COVID, my entire family. My kids' daycare had an outbreak of the variant of concern, which I think was the UK variant that was super contagious in March that everyone was getting COVID. So we like dodged this bullet for almost an entire year and a half of running away from the thing that the entire world is trying to hide from. And we got it. 11 of us got it. My parents, who are in their 70s, my sister, who was very involved with us, my nanny, and 5 members of my family.
What was the difference between the adults' symptoms or how you guys felt versus your children?
So it was really messed up. So Matt and I and my nanny, my parents and my sister, we got hit so hard with that wave. Matt and I, like we're like, the first day you're like, oh, I'm fine. And the next day you're like, I am dying. It's literally like cold and flu and every virus you've ever had in your entire life every virus you're having in your entire life happened at the exact same time. That's what COVID is. It's everything you could possibly ever imagine. And the fact my parents were in their 70s, survived it, is like unbelievable. They had one vaccine. They still got hit hard. They were on oxygen for about 7.5 weeks afterward. It was insane. And my nanny, myself, and my husband, my sister, all had similar sort of like flu-like symptoms, but I don't even want to say it was flu. Like, we had no help with our three children post-operatively. We were here for 2 weeks. My nanny was out. My sister was out. Our entire village that we counted on was out. And I thought, like, how could this year get any worse? We just had this open heart surgery. And then we had COVID. And the minute we recovered from COVID, and I didn't know anyone who had COVID. We were the first people I knew. And, you know, we were living a pretty COVID-safe lifestyle. Just our daycare had 11 cases that broke out amongst the kids. Like, what are you going to do? And I had actually pulled my son from public school and put him into this private daycare where they had a JK program so my kids would be in a smaller bubble so they wouldn't get COVID. Literally, that was... So it's one of a million decisions you make as a parent that you just... Oh, well, like, it happened anyways. So we all got COVID that March. April 1st was the day we were done our quarantine from when we got COVID. That was the day I get a call from Sick Kids Genetics to tell me we've discovered that Henry has a rare genetic disorder.
Had they been investigating something?
They had. So cardiology alerted genetics, and often with a heart issue, it's very common there is a genetic syndrome. And rare genetic syndromes are extraordinarily rare because they're exactly that. Even though there's millions of people who have rare genetic syndromes, no two are the same. And often there are some similarities. And often what Henry had, which is the coarctation of the aorta, is an indicator of certain genetic disorders. We're not carriers. It's not passed down. There's no environmental issues. It's a random genetic mutation of one of the chromosomes. That's literally it. So while we were in hospital, the geneticists, I love them, but they're like the nerdiest people you've ever met. There's 15 geneticists in Toronto. The pediatric geneticists are the sweetest, most, they're so sweet, but they're like, they're literally like mice. Like they come into the room and you don't even, they're like, hello, my name is Dr. So-and-so. I'm here from genetics. We're just going to take a photo of Henry and run it against our database. I'm like, okay, like never thought anything of it. And then because we had an extended stay, this one geneticist came back. She's like, hi, I'm Henry's mom. I just want to let you know, we found this paper. Some of these findings look like Henry. Just the baby looks like Henry, and they have this and this and this that Henry has, but he doesn't have all of these things. I'm like, okay, cool. So I started researching a bit about anything that they said could look like a rare genetic disorder. I started researching it. So this one very rare genetic disorder called Myhre syndrome is what Henry had. And it happened to be that sick kids could test for it, which is very, very rare. And it happened to be that this geneticist happened to find this one research paper from Harvard with a baby that looked exactly like Henry. So it's a blessing and a curse. We were at Sick Kids for 90 days in total. If we hadn't been there, we wouldn't have found the disorder. And many people who have this rare genetic disorder, it was only starting to be diagnosed in 2012. Many people have lived their entire lives into their adulthood, or many people had lost children not knowing that this was what they had. So Henry's one of the youngest people in the world to have this diagnosis. There's only 6 people in Canada with this diagnosis. There's less than 200 people on the planet. So he's 1 in 38 million with this diagnosis. And we're learning more and more about it. It's a connective tissue disorder. And there's all these things that are going to affect his ability to function and live. But we're hoping, and we have seen that there are many adults, not many, but there are adults who live in the world with Myhre who had lived into that point with a variety of challenges, but not knowing that they had this condition. The fact that we know allows us, I think, to have much more interesting opportunities for early intervention, and us for also to know that he's not just a simple cardiac baby. Cardiac babies, you fix their heart and they're repaired. And they sort of live a very full life. With Henry, because of the cardiac issue was a symptom of a larger condition. We are now learning more and more. And, you know, we're sitting here in August. So April, May, June, July, August, we've known for 4.5 months about this condition. So we're still learning. And it took us about 6 weeks to process. So a Mother's Day of this past year is when we shared with our community and our family about Henry's condition, because it took us some time to sort of process and digest what it had been. And I'm still processing and digesting. So anything that happens now with Henry, I don't hesitate. If he has a freaking runny nose or a fever or he has a trip, we are going to SickKids. Like, we are now a SickKids family. And that's how Project Halo, which is now our charitable initiative, came to be, is that we really wanted to give back in a way that was really meaningful. And we had always done charitable initiatives, but not to this magnitude. And one day I was at SickKids and I had been sitting there, and I know they're building a new hospital, but I really felt like there wasn't like a comfortable place for parents to be, especially when you're waiting for your kid to have surgery. They have these waiting rooms and they're pretty sterile. And the places where families are at, you're not allowed to like check in to the hospital while your kid's in operation. Your kids are not considered to be admitted until they are post-operative. So if somebody's kid is having a 12-hour surgery, they're sitting in a waiting room, sleeping on anything they can with their suitcases and their pillows, like just waiting. And then when their kid is in CCU or ICU, there's nowhere for them to go. You're just sitting there with your suitcases. And with COVID, what you see around the hospital, Renee, are parents sleeping in vehicles in the underground parking lot. And one parent is parked literally making a bed in their trunk. It is like, literally, I'm going to say it's like a refugee camp of parents of kids who are in dire situations. It is horrendous.
Like, parents who need the most comfort and support and like are going through something so significant, to think that that's their environment that they get to hang out in and, you know, go through all these difficult emotions and process what's going on. Yeah, that's a problem.
Or not even process. It is a problem. And it's not necessarily SickKids. That's just what the hospital policies are. So I was like, I want to build the sickest parent lounge where parents can rest and chill. And even when you're waiting for those surgical moments, that's one thing. When you're admitted and your kid has been living in hospital, I met parents whose kids are waiting for heart transplants. I met parents who've been there 10 times. I met a girl who's had 29 surgeries. Like, they have been there a lot. And it's not a place where parents get to really hang out. It's a place where there's so much catering to the kids, and that's what it should be. It's too magical, and a kid doesn't even know it's happening because it's one of those situations that's so horrendous, but they have amazing therapy clowns and they have amazing spaces for kids to be entertained and to be inspired. But if you're as an adult person going through and processing these things, like, you know, it can be a really hard place to be. And I know they're working toward in the new hospital to create like new spaces that are super inspiring and beautiful and very much for parents. So that's why we committed to this $1 million fundraise by 2026 to create a space for parents that's really inspiring and beautiful and comfortable and full of dignity and pride and softness when you're like going through something super hard. So that's what our goal is for Project Halo. We're $100,000 in, and we started in middle of March, and we're hoping to continue to work towards that goal. Our parenting community has been remarkable with this fundraising initiative. And now it's sort of built into the fabric of who we are as an organization, as we will always have this Project Halo. And once we've raised $1 million for SickKids, we're going to raise another million for another cause, whatever it could be. So this is our commitment for the time being. And it's really necessary to create a space. And I think it goes back to our roots, right? Like, we're all about the Mom Halo vibe, which is like giving moms a great day. And those moms at SickKids, like, no one ever wants to be a parent of a sick kid. I can tell you that. I can bet your bottom dollar. No one says, oh, I really hope my kid is unwell. The only thing you can hope for yourself is that you are well and that your child is well. And when you have a child who is unwell for any specific reason, there's so many amazing facilities and organizations that take care of the kids and the kids' well-being. There's not a lot out there that's taking care of the mental and physical and psychological and needs of parents of kids who are sick. And I just can't believe, like, I still have to pinch myself that I'm on the other side now, where like, I am a parent of a sick kid. I am a medical mama. I walk around with syringes. I walk around with medical tape, you know? So I'm a mom of a sick kid. That's what I am now. We are a medical family. I have an IV pole in my living room. Like, it's, you know, I have a stethoscope. I know how to do things that most parents will never even imagine that they have to do. And my kid's okay compared to other people's kids. And the grass is always greener, right? Like, when I'm with people whose kids are able-bodied, who are completely healthy, they look at me and they're like, holy crap, how is she doing it? And I look at other families whose kids are extraordinarily challenged with when it comes to able-bodiedness or physicalities or rare genetic disorders or people who have terminal illness. You know, when you look at kids getting on the elevator at SickKids and you know they're going to the cancer floor, you're like, you can't help but like, you know, your heart breaks a bit when you see a parent walking around sick kids and you know that they're wearing the parenting badge that makes them an inpatient, everyone like bows their head to each other because you know like you're in it for the long haul. So that's the story, more or less. I've never told it before, Renee. This is the first time I'm telling sort of the whole thing.
This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transition to table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched, your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddo's mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order.
Like, everybody needs to hear the story. It's a really important story. And I'm wondering if you have advice for parents who are finding themselves in a similar situation, or someone who does have a child that's unwell and is struggling. Like, what are some things that you think are important for parents to do for themselves, or advice on how to navigate this?
My advice for how to navigate this is, if you're somebody who has a recent diagnosis of any nature, look, I've been on the other side too, right? I've had a kid who's had a broken bone, like Essa, my second child, right before COVID, in February of 2019 or 2020, whatever it was. I don't remember what year it is. January 2020, Essa broke her femur and she was in a body cast from her nipples to her ankle. And I remember being like, oh my God, how am I going to manage with my kid in a body cast? A broken bone. Like, she was healed in 7 weeks, right? So it's about perspective a bit. I think, you know, when kids, you know, have a tumble or they get a skin burn or something like that, it's like no one wants those sorts of things for their kids. Our job and our lives as parents, really, it comes down to two things, is to make sure our kids are safe and that they're healthy. That's what our jobs are. And sometimes we can't really control. And that's a very hard thing to realize. So I think number one is like realizing that you're sort of in a controlled-less situation. Number two is if you find out that you are now a medical mama, if you're in a situation where your kid all of a sudden is unwell for any particular reason, whether or not it is for a short time or if it's something that's going to be chronic, like, learn to become an advocate for your kid. Learn the systems. There's so much out there, especially in Canada. There's so many resources available. I'm still learning what's available to us. So that's that. The other thing is just like do the research. You know, read as much as you can. Join the Facebook groups, even if you're not a joiner. It's good when you have a question and you need to sort of pull the hive, and you might not be a part of that community forever. And when you're sort of in the throes of something like I was, like with heart surgery, I was on that Facebook page every day asking questions to other parents who had been through it before me. And I think also give yourself time to process. I think that's the biggest thing is like, as soon as we came out about Henry's rare genetic disorder, I had a lot of families and a lot of fans and followers and friends reach out saying like, I know somebody who also has a kid with a rare genetic disorder. And like, when I had just found out about the diagnosis, I really didn't want to talk to anybody about it. I didn't really want to hear their stories. I really wanted to just sort of process the cards we had been dealt. And additionally, I think the other piece is like, I'm still processing. I'm still learning. I share the story and we live a very like public life. So I'm very open and honest about much of what happens in our daily grind. I don't really keep much close to the chest. That's my coping mechanism, right? So I'd say for you, like if you're somebody who is looking for a coping mechanism, sharing is really caring, for lack of a better word. I know a lot of people whose kids have been sick, or a lot of people, for instance, who've had COVID or whatever it is. And it's like this little like dirty secret. They don't tell people. They think they're going to be judged. I've had people come to me privately, like my kid has a rare genetic disorder. I've never told anybody before because of COVID. We got away with not telling anybody. And I'm not sure that's the way to sort of live an experience. I'm not sure. That doesn't work for me. I need to share. I need to find my community. So those are the other things. I also think like, it's okay to be upset. It's okay to sort of mourn the loss of the life that your child was going to have, or you thought they were going to have. That was a really hard one for me. And to some degrees, Renee, I have to be honest, like when I see normal, healthy babies, and I have children who are normal and healthy, but when I see kids who are Henry's same age and stage and they're totally normal and they're hitting all the developmental milestones, I'm sort of like, I can't follow this person. I have a hard time seeing healthy kids. And that's a hard thing to admit, is like, I see somebody who is 9 weeks older or 9 weeks younger, and I'm like, oh, that baby's so cute. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, F you, like your baby, why do I have an unhealthy baby? So I think some of that's a little bit like, why me? It's not guilty or pity, but it's recognizing those thoughts, blessing them, and then forgetting them, right? And then trying to celebrate the beauty that is, right? I've had a lot of people I know in my life who had siblings who were special or had rare disorders or had conditions, and they themselves are really amazing people, and they literally accredit their like personality, their demeanor, their patience, their kindness, their purpose in life. They pay homage to their sibling who had difference. So to some degree, maybe I'm hoping that as my kids get older, I know a lot of adult siblings who hate each other and are warring all the time. But I also know a lot of adult siblings who have a sibling who is an adult with special needs, and they don't have that dynamic because they just have a different value proposition in their minds. If they go through life, they don't take things for granted the way that other people might. So I'm hoping to find what I call the lemonade situation, is you always make lemonade when you're given lemons. And I'm really good at making lemonade. I'm also really good at existing and feeling not always happy and amazing and not super sad and low. I can't do that. I'm medium. I rotate in the medium ecosystem, and I'm very candid with that. So if you're a family going through those things, feel the feelings, find the support, acknowledge those feelings, even the dark ones, and just try to find your community. And this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Like, we're in it for the long haul. So, and if you ever need anything and you think I could be somebody who could help parlay you to a direction for support in sort of the ecosystem of medicalized moms, I'm happy to help do those sorts of things as well.
So obviously with a rare genetic disorder, and like you were saying, there's 6 people in Canada that have it, it must be difficult. Like, where do you go for treatment, for guidance? And obviously, I know you talk a lot about all the physical therapy that he's doing and that he's going to need in the future, and occupational therapy. So you guys had set up a GoFundMe specifically because of all these medical things that you're going to need for his whole life, probably. And so how can people support that? And then also, if they know someone who is going through something similar, what is the best way for people to support families? And can you tell us about the GoFundMe and where people can go for that?
Yeah. So when we learned about Henry's rare genetic disorder, it came to be that like, we're hardworking people, right? Like we're middle-class people, but the amount of money that we need to take Henry to his 18th birthday with the level of therapies and intervention he's going to require is not normal.
People probably think you're Canadian, isn't healthcare free, but can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, our public healthcare system is free. The leading expert in the world on this particular matter is based in Boston. Her name is Angela Lin. The foundation in the community is called the Myrie Foundation, which I'm learning more and more about. And in order to go to Boston, if you want to go to Boston and like have a workup, it's for 3 days, it's $30,000 just to go for the tour and to meet all the specialists. And of course, in Henry's lifetime, we're going to want him to meet the leading expert in the world. Because of COVID, it's extraordinarily hard to go right now. Because of the way that US hospital systems work, they have a hard time seeing people out of state, never mind out of country. And Myri is quite actually common in the UK. There's about 36 people in Britain. There's people in Spain. There's people in some of like the Netherlands and stuff like that. So lots of international people want to see this one world expert, and she can only take on a certain amount of patients in a year. So we're trying to like get closer to the community. That being said, yeah, like Henry's in therapy 3 to 4 hours a week right now. And it's $140 an hour for private therapy. That's what it is. Not all insurance covers it. And we maxed out within like 2 weeks of him being home. So yeah, a lot of people do start medical GoFundMe to help with those medical bills. And I have to tell you, Renee, like we were overwhelmed when we announced on Mother's Day of this past year about Henry's condition. We were really uncomfortable with the GoFundMe. Like it was like an extraordinarily uncomfortable thing to be like, we need help and we need financial help. But that's what families need. They need fucking financial help. I mean, people were sending us Uber meals for like 3 months, which was awesome and so amazing. And I had this whole thing going on. My coping mechanism in hospital, which I didn't really talk about, was like every day when I was at SickKids for about 3 months, like our community was doing acts of radical generosity, whether or not it was sending food to the nurses or sending gifts to the nurses or arranging meals for the nurses. I literally had like a meal train going for probably weeks where the nurses of 4D were not bringing lunches because they knew that Alana's community was going to like supply dinner that week or whatever. So those things were amazing to like do things for the people who help keep people alive at SickKids. And then on a personal note, it was a really hard thing to ask for financial help and to realize like we are going to need this for a long time. So we set the goal of $100,000. Actually, it was $10,000 was the first goal. And we beat that in like 15 minutes. So we moved it up to $100,000, which we got to pretty quickly. We've now moved it up to $200,000 because we realize the money is going, like we're spending it already on Henry and his needs, on his care. As I said, we always wanted to have 4 kids. Henry will be our last child because he actually requires the care of like 2 or 3 kids. He needs one-on-one care all of the time. And then as a parent, I had to make a decision, right? Do I go to Boston for a 3-day tour of like meeting the leading expert, or do I take $30,000 and invest that into 12 months of physical therapy right now, right? So those are the decisions I have to make, and we had to weigh those decisions. So like I've pulled both of my kids, Elias and Essa, my older ones, out of any care facility, and we're changing things up in order to make sure we can pour everything we have into Henry for the next 3 years is our goal, because we want to get him talking and walking and eating so that by the time he ages into a public school system, we have the option to say like, does he need to continue to have intervention for his entire life? And we just don't know. With Myri syndrome, it's such a huge spectrum of ability and disability. It's such a spectrum of everything from, are kids verbal or nonverbal? Are they vision impaired? Are they hearing impaired? Are they in a wheelchair? Are they in a walker? It is such a huge spectrum. And you know, the research and the sample size is so small that we don't even know what we don't know yet until it presents. So we're also, you know, we've met with a really interesting financial advisor who specializes with families with kids with special needs. That's his expertise. And he said, most people don't come to him until their kids are in their 20s. And saying like, oh my God, like my kid has now grown through the system. I now have an adult child who is unable to manage like in the world. And now we need to start planning for them. He's like, the fact that our child's not yet one, when we first made the phone call to say, we'd like to put away a little nest egg for Henry or invest these things so that when he is 18 and 25 or whatever, that he has those things in place. He was like, you're making the right decision now with these things. So some of it is like immediate needs and some of it is long-term needs. When I talk to sort of other moms and families who are in similar situations, who are kids are way more severely disabled than us, I said, like, how do people financially do this? And the answer is like, people just live in debt. They just live in extreme amount of debt. Technologies like wheelchairs and stuff like that, sometimes it's covered, sometimes it's not. Hearing aids, sometimes they're covered, sometimes they're not. And that stuff's really expensive. So on the ground, like it is a huge financial, I guess, implication of having a kid who is unwell, not to mention the emotional and physical challenges of just on us as a family. It's extraordinarily hard. And that's why we set up the GoFundMe, is, and it will be open for his entire life. So at any given time, and we hope, we now see our friends and families as sort of very invested in Henry's health. And our plan is once a year, we're going to give an update through our GoFundMe to anyone who's ever contributed.
Awesome. That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing this story. I'm sure lots of people are going to relate. And it's just nice even for families who don't have a child with special needs or a rare diagnosis, I love sharing other people's stories because I think in parenting, we're so involved in our own kids and we're like, we have blinders on to what other people might be going through. So I love to hear stories and being able to share your story was an honor. And I'm so happy that you came on. Where can people find Mom Halo and how can they donate to Project Halo? Tell us everything where people can find you.
All the things. Yeah, no, Renee, it's interesting you say that, by the way. I just want to remark on that one thing is like, I used to be somebody who saw somebody's kids who had special needs or who are unwell and I couldn't see it. Like I just had to go buy it. I didn't want to even think about a kid being sick. It was too hard for me to see a kid who was unwell that I would just swipe right by. It's uncomfortable because you're like, you don't want to ever empathize or put yourself in the situation where you're like, holy shit, I never want to be there. So I challenge you, if you're watching this, like if you see something that is a difference than your life, it doesn't matter if it's race, religion, socioeconomic status, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the world right now. It's hard to see hard things, but I think if we want to grow and we want to learn and we really want to create a world that's different for our kids, and we ourselves have to have empathy and look at things that are hard to see. So I challenge you to stop the scroll and look at something that might be a little bit uncomfortable. So that's number one. Number two, if you are interested in learning more about our sort of vivacious and fun community, the Mom Halo Vibes, check it out at Mom Halo is on our Instagram. Our website's obviously at momhalo.com. We run our big, big annual event that's actually coming up called Mom Fest, which is sort of our very big celebratory annual party, which is coming up this October and will happen again in May. So it happens twice a year.
So is it in person now?
We are doing person and virtual. It's called hybrid. We're doing one day live, one day virtual, and one evening live, and all very COVID policies in place. So yeah, we're going live.
Where is it?
It's going to be in Toronto at downtown on Peter Street at a place called Ricarda's. We've been there before. So the Sunday, which is the October 17th, will be a market with timed entries and reduced capacities, but all COVID friendly. The 18th will be all virtual conference style, like virtual panels all day on a variety of topics for all different stages and ages of parenting. And then that evening, we're going to like a gala, like a MomFest Awards gala. And I say it's an air quote because it's a very un-gala gala. It's just like a huge party with lots of things happening. And it's going to be very beautiful and really nice and very, very obviously reduced capacity because of COVID. So yeah, we're going live and, you know, whatever the world will bring, our hope is to still be able to go live. We've planned, I've already paid for the venue, so we're going live and we're just fingers crossed that everything will go as well as planned. We're going to do everything we can to protect our mommies and our kids and whoever attends. Yes, more on that. And those are all those places. If you want to learn more about Project Halo, it's at Project Halo on Instagram, which is our charitable initiative. And what we challenge families to do is like just to fundraise any way you want. Some people started baking companies just to do this. Some women and parents did like garage sales. Some people spun up clothing businesses. A lot of people started sort of their own social enterprise as a way to participate in this. And that was sort of like a very interesting surprise is we're third party fundraisers for sick kids. And now we have all these third party fundraisers for Project Halo. And it's been remarkable to see people. I call it like the bread money. Like people made a sourdough company and they're, you know, raised like almost $10,000 from that. There's been a music teacher who does baby classes and she's at like $10,000 just from pay what you can music classes every Sunday. So people have really leaned in hard, the community, and it's a fierce love and dedication to this project. I think people really saw it because I was showing it as I was going through it. So they felt it. So that's Project Halo. And then if you want to know more about the GoFundMe, we can link it up here too. So thanks so much.
Awesome. Okay. Yes, I will put all the links and the links to the Instagram accounts and everything in the episode notes. So yes, it was really nice to chat with you. And
you too, Renee.
Thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story.
Bye.